FW presents Panel by Panel, the show that dissects a single comic book panel from the last 85 years of comics history. Each episode, I'm Siskoid, and our panelist from Unpacking the Power of Power Pack, it's Rick Heineken. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much for inviting me all the way up to this northern Canadian city. I really appreciate it.
Yes, it's like being here, isn't it?
It very much is.
Yeah, so you decided to submit yourself to this experiment.
Yes.
As all our guests have. I've never forced anyone to do it. I should try. I should force someone.
Just get some random phone numbers and call them up. Hi, this is Siskoid. I have a question for you. Tell me about this panel.
So, let's look at what panel we did get. Here's the randomized series of choices. It's using my database of available comic book materials, either physical or digital. Prior to the recording, we rolled up a year, a month, a comic on the stands that month, a page, and finally, a panel. In this case, we roll the year 1994, the month of March. Among all the comics out that month, the revolving finger falls on a graphic novel, actually, Love and Rockets, Wigwam Bam by Jaime Hernandez, or perhaps Jaime Hernandez, as Blue Beetle has taught me. Page 1 of 137 and panel 2 of 2, which you'll find in the show notes at fireandwaterpodcast.com. So, Rick, full disclosure, this was a possibility for the randomizer because a couple years ago I bought a number of Love and Rockets collections. And this story is included in Volume 3, Perla La Loca, but I admit to not having read them yet, except a couple pages. So Love and Rockets is still the same blank spot for me that I tried to fill when I got them. What about you?
So I've heard of Love and Rockets, the band.
The band, sure.
I may have at one time heard of Love and Rockets, the comic. So this is a complete blind spot for me. I know nothing about it. I glanced at the Wikipedia page just for the barest of context, but then I walked away from it saying, I want to go in completely blank, just knowing exactly what's on this panel. So right. I have no context for really who these characters are, what the storyline is, what's happening, or why I'm here.
Of course, we know the band from the mid to late 80s because they actually picked the name based on the comic. The comic is the inspiration for the name.
There you go.
And then later on, the Hernandez brothers introduced a band in the comic that was also called a garage band called Love and Rockets, which was supposed to be a wink at the band that took their name from their own comic. So
it's the literal definition of a snake eating its own tail.
That's it. Ouroboros. Yes. Or in this case, the graphic novel is called Love and Rockets X. So if you're looking for that merging of reality and fiction, there it is. So we know that Love and Rockets is this seminal indie comic, not superheroes at all. You know, it's real people living lives. And this panel is really big. It's really the first, I say it's panel 2 of 2, but when you look at the page, the first panel is more of a splash title kind of thing that has nothing to do in the action. So this is very, very much our introduction into that story.
Wow.
It's a big square panel and there's a lot happening, a lot of detail in it. It's black and white. I'll let you describe it.
Okay. Well, that's some interesting context because that really does lay the reader pretty much in the same spot as us if we have no idea about this context. So what I see here is we've got a party going on. Well, there's a party in the back room. We are pretty much based in a kitchen. And congratulations to all you folks who are playing the panel by panel lottery, because guess what? We have another refrigerator.
Yeah.
So we have two ladies standing in this kitchen with in front of this refrigerator. The door is open. One of them is reaching in, getting out a bottle of beer. She already has, well, a bottle of some type of, I'm guessing, alcohol. She's got one bottle already in one hand. Behind her is the second lady, who is Meg, and she's holding a carton of orange juice, and she also has a bottle of some kind of alcohol. Meg is dressed in a very short mini skirt dress combination. It looks like her friend who's reaching in the refrigerator, whose name is Hopi, she is reaching in and she is also wearing a short mini skirt dress, I think, but she's also got a coat on. So she may actually be putting beer into the refrigerator, but We don't know. They're having a conversation. Like I said, they're in this kitchen that's looks very used, and out is a door leading out to a party, because there is at least six people, maybe seven people that we can kind of see. There are five that are very obvious. There's two guys who are looking in the room, kind of checking out the two girls inside, looking in the refrigerator. Like I said, this is a party. Another clue that we have it's a party is because on the left side of the room of the kitchen, we see a plastic bag filled with empty bottles and cans, and there's some liquid on the floor underneath that bag. So this party has already gone through a lot of drinks, is what it looks like. That's kind of the overall sketch. Yeah. I can go into some more detail because there's a lot more detail in this.
Yeah, I mean, they're really setting the stage for something. I personally have the feeling that they are putting the alcohol in the fridge, that they've just arrived because Hopi has the coat on. And so it must be kind of cold outside, I imagine. She's also, yeah, it's party wear. So right. It's cold outside. I've got a coat on, but the shortest dress possible. And in Mag's side of things, it's a very tight dress. She's more of a plus size woman.
Right.
So the people here look realistic is a thing. One is very thin when the other one is plumper. We're not getting the superhero physiques that a lot of comics trade on.
Yeah. I hadn't realized before until I started explaining it out that, like, oh, you know what? I was always assuming they were taking it out, but it really, with Hopi's coat on, it looks like she's putting the stuff in. Meg might have actually been at the party already, and Hopi's just bringing more booze to the party.
And maybe she's bringing, you know, there's that paper bag in the back with one bottle sticking out. So maybe that's what she brought. And now Mag is helping her put the stuff in as quickly as possible. And to make room, you know, you're always shifting stuff inside the fridge. So that's where the orange juice carton comes in.
Maybe. It could also be that they're bringing the orange juice in because, you know, it's a party. They may want screwdrivers.
Mag is also going, look, I found one right on the old orange juice carton. So she's looking at something, a picture on the... So this is the mystery of the story without the context. What is she looking at on the back of the orange juice carton? And it's something that makes her smile. So even if it's supposed to be, you know, like a missing person, that person is probably not really missing.
either that or she won a bet because, look, they're putting the missing kids' pictures on all the cartons, not just milk cartons anymore. So I won this bet. See, there's one here on this orange juice carton.
Yeah, exactly. So Hopi says, "What? Oh, yeah, real nice, Mag." And she's unimpressed in this.
Yes.
So, you know, you've got some, like, different expressions as well from them and from the people in the back. There's also, like, this one of the people in the party wearing, I'm going to call them fishnet stockings. They're not fishnet. They're actually like crossed, like stars. Looks like she's walked out of Sin City.
I was actually thinking almost Rocky Horror Picture Show. It almost looks like Dr. Frankenfurter.
Right.
there's some weird vibe about that.
Yeah, that may be a wink to that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, you're right. So, I mean, it's all connected. I'm sure half the characters in the Sin City come from Rocky Horror Picture Show.
This is true. Let me ask you a question. One of the two guys that are staring in the room, does the one guy who's kind of front and center, does he just kind of remind you of a priest of some sort?
Yeah, I felt like the collar made him the collar and the dark clothes made him priest-like. He's probably not a priest. It's not a real priest collar. But yeah, I totally get that vibe from him. He's sort of, I don't know, he's staring in our direction, and he doesn't seem necessarily lascivious the way the other guy, because the other guy's checking out Mag's bum is basically what's happening there. But the other is just very stone faced. He's got two glasses. So maybe he's going for refills. Maybe he doesn't seem like he's walking. Maybe he's just waiting for them to get out of the kitchen so that he can get some refills.
Yeah. He may be holding on to Mag's drink because, like I said, Mag looks like she's already at the party. She's not wearing a coat. So he may be holding Mag's drink because she went in to help unload the groceries.
Right, that makes
possibly.
Sense. Yeah, and don't you just hate it when a garbage bag leaks? That's...
I think that, yes and no, I think that also might be the sign of one heck of a party. If that all is from tonight, I think that these people are rocking the bottles. So they've definitely gone through a lot. Yes.
Yeah, it looks really full.
I actually like that detail, though. Yeah, it makes it look like this is an active party. There is things actively happening. This is not a spick and span clean kitchen. This is a kitchen that's being used. So
And the box next to the garbage bag, obviously we see things in it. It's not what it is, but the profile is very much like a comic book box. So it's,
oh yeah,
it's turning on all my OCD alarms. It's like the comic book box liquid. It's no.
One, don't put your comic book boxes in the kitchen. Two, don't put them on the floor. Three, don't put them next to a garbage bag that leaks.
I used to store them. At one point, I was forced to store them in a really damp attic. And they're none the worse for wear, somehow.
That's all right. At one point in time, before, like, in the midst of moving out of my parents' house and into a new place, I didn't have a bed for a little while, but I had these, you know, kind of foam mattresses. Mm. I found that these two foam mattresses fit perfectly on top of my comic book boxes. And so that became my bed, just sleeping on the comic book boxes on this foam bed. This is the things we have to do sometimes.
We make choices. But those long boxes are actually really tough.
Yeah, they are very tough.
Mine are all scratched up by cats, but the comics are fine. There's been rain on the top of them because I've left them near a window. Comics are fine. So I'm happy with the product.
They're to take the damage so the comic book boxes, the comic books don't. But you're asking a lot next to a leaky bag. One thing I didn't really know tell too much about, or you kind of mentioned a little bit, but the refrigerator itself, because the way it's opened, we can see inside. There is a ton of bottles already in there, and there's also some other food-related items as well. But, I mean, you can count at least inside the fridge seven bottles.
At least. How does this compare? And I know the answer, but how does this compare to the fridge that we saw the Thing go into a couple episodes back?
Oh, boy. I'd have to relook at that one really quickly.
Well, I'll save you the trouble.
Mm-hmm.
This one looks real. The other one didn't open the right way. It didn't really have the drawers, and it was like filled with cans, or, you know, like large cans. Like it was all like tomato juice or something. This one looks like it's real. So I feel like Love and Rockets, Hernandez is really doing, you know, the real world, and he's an illustrator. And this isn't a small panel where you're sort of being cheap with the line work. It's a large panel. It's more than half the page. So you can put all that detail in.
There's a lot of detail. I wish we had just a little more detail on the side of the refrigerator because there is a calendar there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can only figure out DOM and L something. And there's a figure on there. So it might actually be like a model calendar. There's like a cookie jar on the counter next to the refrigerator. There is some post-it notes on the freezer top of the refrigerator. The floor itself is wood paneling, so you have this straight panel lines that are going throughout. It is very, very detailed for, it is, the introduction to this book. It's the introduction to these characters, so it makes sense, but it's very delicate as far as, what it's telling.
And I think that's a kind of an odd thing, the flooring, because a lot of apartments have wooden flooring, which is, I'm looking at mine right now, that's what it is, but once you hit the kitchen and the bathroom, it's tile or it's linoleum, So it kind of usually switches up because that's easier to clean and you don't want spills on your wooden floor. So that's an odd detail, although I think Love and Rockets usually took place either in Mexico or California. So depending on which brother was writing it or something. This may be, true to life for apartments in that area. I don't know. To me, it has like a New York feel. Just I'm going by movies, obviously. I've never lived in either of those areas. The small cramped apartment, the wooden flooring, which speaks to something like older buildings. I feel like it has a New York vibe to me. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just me.
No, that sounds about right. It definitely has more of a urban center. But this is a party at some kind of little apartment with a lot of people. It almost feels a little bit like a costume party, just a little bit. I know that we don't see the costume on our two female protagonists, but the priest in the background and the person dressed up in what kind of looks like Rocky Horror getup, I don't know, maybe. Maybe it's just me being in the Halloween mood because of the time I'm doing this.
Yeah, maybe. And I kept looking at that dress that Mag is wearing and thinking it looked familiar, and it just hit me. It isn't a reference to that because I'm going to make a reference that is much closer to us in time than 1994. But in Legion of Superheroes, volume 6 or 7, basically, in green and pink, this was what Shrinking Violet was wearing, more or less.
Ah.
It was really that cut with the thicker lines doing the cleavage and that those lines running through, which are kind of a Legion, like a reboot Legion kind of look. But volume 6-7 is Paul Levitz returning to the book. And I don't know. It could be an odd kind of reference because when she's wearing that, she is, they've ported over the fact that Violet and Lightning Glass are a couple.
Mm-hmm.
And from the quick context that I read on Wikipedia, I did the same as you. These two are a couple or a sometime couple.
Mm-hmm.
They're best friends, but they've been a couple. And for sure, Hopi is gay. So it's kind of, okay, I'm looking at that same, I don't know. It feels like, was this actually a reference by the artist of the day, you know, like decades later for Legion? I don't know. I can't prove that.
If nothing else, it leads further into the theory that this might actually be a Halloween costume party then. She's dressed up like Shrinking Violet.
Shrinking Violet as she would be portrayed 20 years from when she's wearing it.
Eh. I've seen people dress up as the 1969 Batman. So, you know,
at least that was in their past.
Sure.
It's harder to dress as people for the future. Well, although I've done it. I've dressed up as Doctor Who, mm-hmm. but a Doctor Who played by someone who hadn't yet been cast.
There you go. See?
We're inventing story details based on the non-contextual element of panel by panel.
Which I thought is what we wanted to do. That's not,
yeah, exactly. So just like what the mystery of the what's on the juice box is,
yes.
is kind of is whatever we want it to be at this point.
What were your thoughts on it? Because I did have the thought of the missing child, but I also had at least one other thought of what it could be as well. Do you have a guess or an estimate?
I think that because she's smiling, I don't think it would be a kid.
Right.
I think the smile is, you know, somebody, because, I mean, if this was volume 3 mm-hmm. of Love and Rockets in terms of compilations, and the series had been running since the early 80s, this is our introduction to these characters, but it is not the introduction to these characters.
Right.
They know each other, and they've had other adventures. So this may relate to something in the past, or we may now flash back to that, you know, in the same story. Who knows? It has to reveal the mystery. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking it's like one of their friends, one of them, it's her. That would be like the story I'd be telling based on this, if I were to riff on this one panel. She's looking at a picture of herself, and we're going to find out what the story is behind the fact that she was mistakenly thought to be missing or kidnapped.
Huh.
And maybe the you know, it's just like, oh, look, this carton still has it, even though I've been found. Hopi doesn't think the joke is very funny, so maybe she had a lot of stress and anxiety about this when it did happen. But for Mag, who was maybe more of a free spirit, it is not a problem. She thinks it's a hoot. So we're seeing, like, I think the personalities are contrasting here in that way, where one of them is a little bit more, you know, bitter about it.
Right. I was kind of taking this a little bit different way. I was thinking that it might not be the child that's missing or the missing child milk carton thing. I was thinking that because Hopi's the one coming back in, she's been late to the party or she was sent out to get more drinks or more things, and they may have been having a conversation about what's a good recipe for a good screwdriver. And there's the middle of that conversation where, like, you know, Hopi's like, well, you know, I know we can find a good recipe somewhere, and are you sure you didn't find it when you're out? Look, I just want to get the groceries out of the bag, into the refrigerator, so I can have fun at this party too. Can you quit bothering me? Oh, look, Hopi, I found one, a recipe for a good screwdriver mix, right here on the side of this old orange juice carton. That's great. Thank you. I still would like to just get the groceries into the fridge so I can go and enjoy the party.
Yeah, imagine if that's her apartment and she and all yeah. these people are here. There's a mess already.
Right.
And so she, you know, she has to cater to. Maybe she had to go out. She was at the party. She had to go out to get more booze and come back. And just a bit of a rush. And you missed, you know, a bit of FOMO. You missed a bit of the party and sort of annoyed by it. Yeah, that could be. Although, what orange juice company puts mixed drinks recipes on the side of their cartons?
One that wants to get a lot of sales to the party going group.
Yeah, exactly. That's your target audience.
That is called targeted marketing right there, okay?
Yeah, for
we
sure.
We don't condone the use of alcohol for minors, but if you want to make a good drink, here you go. Also, right. I think that I was looking it up and trying to figure out what actually is on the side of orange juice cards, or what would be on the side of orange juice cards, because the missing children was pretty much relegated just to
milk
cartons.
Yeah.
But the only thing I can think about would that it would be either ingredients or possibly recipes that you could use the orange juice in. So, you know, it could be anything from a orange Julius type concoction to maybe some kind of probably just some kind of drink concoction that would use orange juice as an ingredient. Of course, it's going to be branded with use X company's orange juice when you make this drink or when you make this concoction.
A coupon, maybe?
Possibly a coupon. Although cutting out a coupon from a side of a milk carton or a liquid carton would be interesting.
You have to wait till you're done.
Yeah, you only make that mistake once.
Any last thoughts on this large panel?
No, I am very curious to find out what this priest is doing there, and I really hope it is a costume party, because otherwise that is it's a very interesting looking priest, and his buddy is looking in for, he's just waiting for the girls to get out here because he wants some action.
Unfortunately, they're apparently gay, so yeah. Sorry, dude.
Well, he may not know that. He's just like, I am hoping I am shut down.
Yeah. Well, he can still activate his male gaze.
Yes.
You know? It's not because he can't get these chicks, but he can look.
No, I am actually very curious to go and hunt down the story now. I want to see how far off we are and how wild we are in our assumptions. But I enjoyed this. I like the idea of just looking at the one panel and really kind of taking it apart a bit and, you know, focusing it out of context. It's a fun little exercise you've developed here. Thank you very much.
I mean, the art is good. I mean, of the two Hernandez brothers, I think Jaime's the more interesting one. I liked his lines better. And now I'm suddenly thinking, oh yeah, that's right. He also did a couple of Who's Who pages.
Huh.
Legion ones. He did Shrinking Violet and Phantom Girl.
There you go.
And so people thought, this is there was like a weird match. Why is this indie illustrator doing Legion of Superheroes content? So now my Shrinking Violet, Lightning Lass thing is, I don't know, seems a little more viable as a theory for some reason, even though it's going in the opposite direction. What is the connection between these characters and those characters and this artist and the artist of the later Legion?
Well, I'm going to go ahead and tell you that you have made at least three other connections just through me on this. And that is because I sometimes do a sometimes show with Nicholas Prom from Comic Reflections.
Sure.
Where he's introducing me to the Legion of Superheroes because I've never read them before. So he's got me reading stuff all the way back from the beginning in the 60s. There's my Legion connection right there to this panel. On my show, Unpacking the Power of Power Pack, we drink beer on the show, and we also take panels that we find in the comic and put them upon a family refrigerator. So this panel is hitting all of my buttons, and it's very strange that you actually picked it for me to be on. So
at random.
At random, too.
I did no picking. It was, you know,
The randomizer did.
The legend of a randomizer continues. And also that there is that link to just, you know, it's not back to back, but we did a Looking in the Fridge panel just a couple episodes back. You know, again, more refrigerators. This is like a weird theme. You don't see a lot of refrigerators in comics.
No,
and
but
yet.
I think that we have to take a look. I think that your randomizer is telling you something. You have too many refrigerators in your collection, sir.
If there's a third one, if ever we hit a third one, then we'll know something's up. Two is a coincidence. Three
is a pattern.
There's something wrong with it. Well, thank you, Rick Heineken. Tell people what you're working on right now. What's up next for Unpacking the Power of Power Pack?
Well, like I was saying, every other week you can find me and my co-host Jeff reaching into a fridge for a beer and then putting the panels of Power Pack on that refrigerator. You can find us at Unpacking the Power of Power Pack. You can find me on Twitter at Jeff and Rick Presents. Next thing up on Unpacking the Power of Power Pack, this morning I just put out the last of the Crack Trilogy. That's Power Pack number 32. And we had Dr. Osvaldo Oyla helping us out trying to figure out what was going on with those characters and the entire crack epidemic in the 80s in New York, too. So it was a lot of fun. No, it was good. It was a good time. And we're kind of glad to be done with that piece and getting on to some of the rest of the issues. And we just have fun. We enjoy doing what we're doing. And, you know, we're just trying to get through the series and enjoy our time doing it and having fun talking to some interesting creators and interesting people. So
yeah, I loved the series back in the day and then lost touch with it. You know, at some point became like direct market only or something. And so I lost touch with it. But I'm really way behind on catching up with your show. So this is just prodding me. I'm leaving an audio message to myself to get back into it.
Well, we would appreciate you listening. If nothing else, at least check out the ones where we interview Louise Simonson and June Brinkman.
Yeah.
They are a blast. They're a kick. And for me, as just a little geek boy, being able to interview a couple of my literary heroes and artistic heroes, it's just been an absolute joy. So
there you go. I'll let you go back to the margins. We'll listen to a short promo, and I'll come back with listener feedback on our previous episode. Thanks, Rick.
Thank you.
For the month of November, the Fire and Water Podcast Network is sponsored by the wonderful all-ages graphic novel, The Only Living Girl.
From David Gallagher and Steve Ellis, the award-winning team that brought you The Only Living Boy, comes this thrilling new action-adventure series, The Only Living Girl.
Hi, my name is Andra. People call me Z. I was a normal girl. I loved science, my bear, and my dad. One day, tragedy struck. But that wasn't the end of my story. I awoke in a patchwork world filled with mermaid warriors, insect princesses, robots. A world created by my dad, who had become a mad scientist. Now I'm stuck in a world that doesn't trust me, in a conflict with my father's creations. Luckily, I still have my friend Eric and my bear. I am the only living girl.
The Only Living Girl, Volume 1, The Island at the Edge of Infinity, is available now in both hardcover and paperback from Paper Cuts.
Jeff and Rick present Unpacking the Power of Power Pack,
where we journey through each issue of the most underrated Marvel series of the 80s while drinking beer,
analyzing awesome and amazing adolescent adventures, and absorbing alcohol.
We got kids with powers, we got villains with attitude.
We got superhero guests, like all of them from the Marvel Universe.
We have thematically appropriate beer reviews.
We have good jokes and bad song parodies.
One stop for all your Power Pack pod-pleasing procurements.
And we got alliteration.
Find Unpacking the Power of Power Pack wherever fine podcasts are played.
Costumes on. We're looking at your feedback from a previous episode, which dealt with a panel from House of Mystery number 158 back in 1966. The panel, not the show, with special panelist Ward Hill Terry. Starting us off, Chris Franklin says, "Great to hear Ward Hill Terry's voice on a podcast, although he did send Cindy and I his wonderful House of Frankenstein song he wrote and recorded, which we played last year, and we'll be playing it again very soon." Well, that's all. It's almost all past. If House of Frankenstein isn't over, it's about to be over, so go check that out elsewhere on the Fire and Water Podcast Network. He says, "I don't know why I didn't get into Dial H as a kid. It seemed tailor-made for a would-be artist kid like myself. I was always designing superheroes, so why didn't I send in a submission? I have no clue. I agree, this panel is a lot of fun. I could see Lichtenstein or one of the pop artists of the day ripping it off as a generic example of superhero comics. It would also make a great T-shirt. Well, unfortunately, that one's still copywritten, so you won't find it on our merch store. So, you know, maybe somebody wants to buy a Heartbreak House shirt or something. There's probably some panels that are not owned by anyone at this point, but I have no plans to do that. Robert Kelly says, "Great podcasting debut for Ward Hill. I don't know, I never really warmed up to the Dial H strip in either incarnation. Despite my artistic background, I never cared to submit a concept, and it always felt like the heroes that did show up were pretty far down on the Mort scale. Don't even get me started on how angry I was that the later incarnation of Dial H for Hero replaced Aquaman and Plastic Man in Adventure Comics, interrupting two of my favorite runs on those characters." well, my own fandom has the virtue of starting with the backup strip in New Adventures of Superboy, and then I found all those Adventure Comics. They are not as good as the Superboy ones. Ange says, great episode, and always great to hear someone join the podcasting crowd. Dial H seems like a hoot. I am enjoying this new series. Enjoyed Professor Allen's coverage on his show and seeing this panel. The liquid shooting helmet of the squid sounds like something a kid would design. In this case, it was probably an adult. I really enjoyed this show. So interesting to hear the single panel dissected. Martin Gray says, great debut from Ward Hill Terry. Everybody's happy with that. The H dial was missing for years in the DC universe because the Martian Manhunter had it. Dial O for Oreo. I don't think many artists did their own lettering back then. It was more of a matter of custom. If writer and artist were credited at DC in the Silver Age, it was a miracle. And the dial is back in a new Dial H for Heroes series. So people looking for the entire history of Dial H, or at least the heroes that were featured, you can do that at my blog, Cisco's Blog of Geekery, where there is a special Dial H tag. And I am currently reviewing the new series every Friday. And finally, Tim Price says, I resisted as long as I could, but no, this show kept pulling at me and finally had to give it a listen. Started a couple of episodes back and I'm hooked. Darn you, Siskoid, so many podcasts. And Terry, wow, man, great job. You're such a natural for this. Please get this man more guest slots, FNW. But yeah, Tim, these are really short. They're supposed to be, you know, little candies. So really not much of an investment at all. Glad you're enjoying the series. That was comment by comment. I also must remind you that we do have a Patreon page now at Fire and Water, and that's easily found at patreon.com/FW podcasts. If you like this sort of content, please think about leaving a one-time or monthly donation, and you can unlock rewards. So check that out. As ever, a reminder that if you'd like to do one of these short podcasts, drop me a line, we'll arrange it, and you will be handed a comic book panel randomly, and we'll put it up for discussion. My thanks again to my guest, Rick Heineken, and until we refill that seat, the panel is open.